This episode of The A-Team is brought to you by FaceToFaceGames.com, Canada's number one source for Magic the Gathering card singles.
You're just this Akroan sergeant, right? You're just some 2-2 first striking guy. You know, you're just like kind of good in battle, whatever. And then you fucking, if you get through and you like fucking smite the wizard or some shit, then like you're the hero. It's like, man, did you see what Bob did today? Bob who? Fucking Bob, man. And everybody knows your name. It's like Cheers, you know?
Welcome to the A-Team Podcast, brought to your ears by ManaDeprived.com, home of Canadian Magic.
In 2010, a crack Magic playing unit was sent to prison by the DCI court for crimes they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a federal pound-me-in-the-ass prison to the Canadian underground. Today, still wanted by Wizards of the Coast, they survive as podcasters of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can listen to The A-Team.
KYT.
And of course, they rag on me for not talking enough.
Nice.
Listen to me now, bitch.
That's true.
Jay Boosh.
You know what? This is how it works. I'm not old as fuck, and I don't play ED. And those are the two things that apparently matter when you want to play Mindflayer.
Scotty.
And I cash that GP. Like, that's legit. Like, for me, being just the fucking dad grinder, that's a huge deal.
And Jeremy.
Sometimes you just have to be that guy. We're like, oh, you want to play some modern? It's like, yeah, I want to play some modern. And like, I'll suspend a Lotus Bloom, and they're just like, oh, why did I want to play modern with you?
And now, the A-Team.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the A-Team Podcast, episode number 237. It is Mr. Scotty Mack here, joined, as always, by three of my most favorite people in the entire planet. I have one, the only, my partner in Yellowknife, maybe... Jeremy Mouth Oregon Schofield.
What the fuck?
Wow.
Very well done. You've been practicing.
No, not really. I just rubbed the organ all over my lips while I went at it.
It's all it takes. Sometimes you just got to blow on the organ and it just makes beautiful music.
You know, I find that if I shake it and then like vibrate it off my lips, and if they're a little slippery, it really helps.
Perfect. Perfect. It just gets you there, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Nice. I have, of course, the undisputed King of the North, Jay motherfucking Boosh. What's going on, buddy?
Sup? What's happening?
We have, of course, the brand new working man, the hopefully not so silent assassin, Pro Tour Magic Origins bound, KYT. What's going on, buddy?
What is up?
What is up? Hype!
Get there.
So how we doing? It's been a minute? Been about a week and a bit? Yeah. Lots of stuff happened in Magic. We had a pre-release weekend, which is really exciting.
What?
And we've got release weekend here.
Yeah. We got crazy rule changes.
That's really exciting. We can talk about that too. Yeah.
I don't even know about those.
Sweet. We have so much stuff to talk about. And like, I've got
news. You're going to love that one, Jay.
KYT's
got news. I bet I am.
This is sweet. All right. So let's open up with the item that's on everybody's list or everybody's lips. Let's talk about KYT's new gig. Let's just get it out of the way. Not like this is at all paid for or sponsored by or anything. Let's just make sure we get it out of the way. KYT,
before we start, I gotta say, Sal's awesome. That's all I have to say.
That's the only thing you're obligated to say.
Is that an obligation?
No. I truly think he's an awesome man.
He's almost half the man he used to be.
That is true.
Really?
Yeah, he's cleaned up his diet. He's getting a lot of cardio.
Really?
Or so he tells me.
He's looking good. He's looking very good.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
He's lost over 80 pounds, he told me.
Holy fuck.
That's awesome.
What is left of that fat fucker?
I know. And it's crazy, too, because he's like...
He better make some spirit tokens now.
Because he's like 5'2" or something, right?
Yeah.
5'3" or something. So like 80 pounds is infinity. He looks so good.
Lifts.
Yeah. Tom Cruise approved cheese.
Like, I'm looking at this angel token of Sal, and like, if it was 80 pounds less, this angel would suck. Holy shit, I wish I could lose 80 pounds.
Yeah.
So fucking Sal. Better me. Better than me at everything. Yeah. Now even not as fat as me. What a fucker.
So he's been looking really good, and he did something intelligent with all of his newfound skinny wisdom.
Don't say it like that. It makes it sound like he doesn't do intelligent things.
No. I'm just saying that he really, really did like the most intelligent thing possible. You know, with the newfound.
He made the optimal play.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. KYT, what happened? Why are you all up in Sal's business?
It's been a long time coming, I think. It's been something that Sal has talked about since we even, or Sal Matt have talked about since
just your, for listeners,
your Matt one. Is schmaltzy.
Schmaltzy. This is before the times of P.D. Pablo. This Whoa. Was talked about in year one, where they were interested. They foresaw this as a possibility when we worked together, because eventually, you know, they looked at every store, SCG, Channel Fireball, they all have their own content site. So this partnership, this teamwork was in the cards. Like, well, not in the cards, but it had to be, we're in the plans, and basically the cards had to be right, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And finally, they've grown to at a point where they can bring me in, and this was the best fit for both parties, because I don't see Mana Deprived. The next level I always saw, the next level of Mana Deprived, is to start my own store, which is something I just don't have any intention of ever doing. I just don't want to run one, and I also don't want to run one now in competition with some of the people that are already established right now, especially since I'm in a very good relationship with Face-to-Face Games, so being in a competition with them would not make sense.
So I'm sorry. So what happened?
Yeah, you're gonna have to like not just do all this corporate talk
because you were like extremely vague in telling us history. Yeah, you were telling us good history, yeah. And then. Yeah.
So how about you just tell us what the fuck happened? Yeah. Like, how hard is that?
Yeah. Bitch.
We sat down, had a bunch of meetings, and they offered me a job.
Well, there we go.
That's what we're talking about.
There we go.
And what is your job? What is your title, sir?
Yeah, what's your business card say?
I don't have my business card yet. We've been fumbling around with the title.
Come on, Sal, get it together.
Because I'm going to be a pretty jack-of-all-trades type thing. But for now, Peter's come up with media coordinator as my title. And so I'm going to be taking over some of P.D. Pablo's duties, actually. In addition to continuing to maintain Mana Deprived, I'm going to be taking over a lot of the, not a lot, like all of the social media responsibility from the Face-to-Face Game side. And also I get to put my hands into event planning and even local tournaments, helping come up with having actually an impact on the prize structures and deciding on a lot of things for these events, and even planning or calling judges and venues to set up, you know, important ones like RPTQs or WMCQs and stuff like that. So I'm very excited. A lot of responsibility outside of just content management, but this is something that, you know, this is a game of that I love and that I spent a huge deal of time on. So I'm very excited to be in this position. So,
well, I certainly hope you're overpaid.
I'm pretty happy. That's all I'm gonna say about that.
Sweet.
And I love how, you know, in my old job we had working under like very old-fashioned managers were pretty strict on working hours, and here just Sal and Peter understanding the fact that I'm working on social media. There's optimal times for me to do this type of stuff. So they're very lenient on which hours I should be working. And sometimes they want me to stay at the store, like after normal working hours, like after 9 to 5, where normally they host in-store events so that I could take pictures and interview people and hype the shit out of the local store stuff. So that's the awesome thing, that they recognize that I'm not just this 9-to-5 regular old fashioned schedule, that my job to be the most optimal requires a more flexible time than that. So that's really cool. And that's one of the things that I couldn't get out of my previous job. Whereas like they really wanted me to be at my desk 9-to-5. So I'm happy and I'm going to be working on my 9-to-5 more than before. But right now, for the past couple days, I've just been learning the ropes, learning a lot of Peter's teaching me a lot of the social media stuff that he's been doing. And today I went through event planning the next 2 months of events. And that was pretty insane just to take that all in from him.
Nice. Congratulations, awesome. Buddy.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm just happy. It's like I get to work on something that deals with the game that I love. I mean, I can't ask for more than that. So this is extremely exciting, and I'm hoping that once things get rolling, once I'm able to take over a lot of Peter's responsibilities, it frees him up to do more stuff, and then together we're going to build on top of that and bring more exciting things hopefully very soon in 2016, hopefully.
Good, buddy.
Yeah and
that's freaking awesome.
Yeah, and Sal's awesome to work with. You know, there's not much else I can say about the guy. He's pretty cool.
Have you guys already had cool lunch?
No, we haven't.
You guys don't do cool lunch?
No.
Have you opened a pack of cards at work yet?
I have not. Today, everyone but PD Pablo and myself open a shit ton of Magic Origins cards. Like a shit ton of them, getting ready for like all the pre-orders and stuff.
Cases of them.
Right. And
like pallets of them.
And yeah, they spent the whole day and opening, and I saw, you know, they're opening so many that it's not that exciting. Maybe like some of the foils that you might not get that often would be pretty interesting. But I didn't see the people working around me open anything super cool or anything. But
I would love to pick your brain on just like, what does it look like when 1,000 people open packs at an efficiency level? Like what is the ideal?
How sad is it? Everyone just doesn't even care. They're just like, yeah, opening and like sorting and opening and sorting. No one's like,
taking
oh,
the fun out of everything.
Oh, look at this. And like, they're just like, whatever.
I mean, that's awesome, I guess. Like, you don't want like every 5 minutes or every minute, some guy's like, look at this shit.
I think it would be great. Like, that would be the ultimate troll. It's like, go and find that guy from like, your local game store and like tell him like he's coming in on an internship or something like that, and just stick him in the middle of the crowd on like every third pack. Oh my god, I got one of these. And he won't stop until everybody stops to look up at him. Like, you know that guy in the sealed pool who's like sitting there and kind of showing everybody the cards, yep, and everyone's busy sorting cards, and he's like, no, you guys have to see this.
You have to look at this.
I like that guy.
Yeah. There's going to be more tomorrow as well, all day opening and sorting. So just this machine, this card sorting machine that's behind the store right now.
Oh, do they have the machine? Or is it actually like a bunch of people?
A bunch of people.
Because I'd love to see the machine.
So it's going to be a crazy couple of days, because not only are they sorting cards like crazy, there's going to be all these release events that are happening on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So Magic Origins is coming, and I can't wait to do more drafts. I actually haven't had the opportunity to draft, but I did play a Midnight Pre-release, so that was my first touch of Magic Origins, my only touch thus far.
Okay, so pre-release then. You played in a pre-release?
Yeah.
And how was it?
Awesome. I went 4-1, finishing second to our friend William Blondin, who took first. Picked white because I've reviewed, I did a few podcasts I haven't put up yet. Reviewed the set, thought white was really powerful. PV seemed to agree in his article. Picked it, had a very aggressive deck. Actually, mono white even. I picked white, and in my seed pack, 7 out of the 8 white cards were playable. And I had 2 copies of the double white, 2/1 renowned first striker guy. And that guy's just insane. That guy's
fucking insane.
That guy's beyond bonkers.
So is the Vigilance one.
So is Vigilance. I have 2 of that too.
I got in both like pre-releases I played in, we got 0 of both of those cards.
So
did you play white?
Did you play white?
In one of the pre-releases I didn't choose white, but I played white.
And so for my deck, like, I just had this really aggressive deck, and I felt every time I was on the play, I was unstoppable. I think my losses came on the draw against these other renowned decks. So to me, even in sealed, well, you do get that extra seed pack, so it doesn't really reflect like normal sealed. Even sealed, it was like for sure you wanted to be on the play. The format felt extremely fast, faster than I'm used to. And it makes me think that draft might be even more fast. But, of course, all these amazing white cards are double white, and it might be balanced by the fact that white might be overdrafted, or it's hard to build a white-based deck filled with these double white cards if there's other white drafters on the table. So I haven't yet to experience the draft portion, but white felt really strong in the pre-release. And finished second, got like at least two draft set plus other packs. Also got myself a foil Day's Undoing, which is apparently some crazy, I assume, commander.
Yeah, like sell it now. Sell it,
because it's $50. It's like selling for $50 on TCG Player foil. So very happy midnight pre-release for me. Was very happy, and I'm a happy guy today. What can I say?
Are you happy?
I'm. play some music, Jer. I'll be happier.
Yeah, I'm like. Cue the Pharrell right now.
What the fuck?
So good on you. That was an excellent, excellent pre-release story. Jay, you also pre-released, though.
Yeah.
Obviously, you didn't get as sackily lucky as KYT did with the pulls, but what did you pick? Why did you pick it? And how'd you do?
So me and other Jeremy, we picked blue.
Proper shout out, Jeremy Beach.
Yep, we picked blue red both times. So the first time we picked blue red because obviously Thopter Squad is going to be fucking the most powerful. So we picked it hoping to open Thopter Squad.
Sorry, you were two-headed gianting the entire time, the two of you.
Oh yeah, sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, I only play two-headed giant when I play sealed because I don't want to fucking play 18 rounds of, oh my god, look what I opened. Fucking shitty.
Okay.
So, yeah, we picked blue-red both times. The first time we played, we didn't open any cool Thopter guys. We opened, like, I don't know, like a couple of the guy that when he comes into play, you can tap. He puts 2 Thopters into play, and then you can tap both of them to like give something unblockable, and that guy's pretty good. And then we opened a cup, like maybe 1 or 2 of the red guys. That's very good. He's the 3 mana, and when he comes into play, you put one Thopter into play. That guy I actually didn't think was like super great, but he turned out to be actually like really good.
Having played duels, I can tell you like that card is really a lot better than advertised. I agree.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, it's, like, way better than it looks. Like, it looks like kind of like a flare, but it's actually not.
This is the 2-1 for 2 that brings a guy or something, or 3?
Yeah, 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 it's a 2-1 for 2, and it brings a guy, yep.
Yeah, that's sick value.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, so that was, like, kind of disappointing, because we were hoping for, like, Thopter beats. But instead we opened, like, 3 Lightning Javelin and 2 Celestial Flare and the Shock with the 1 mana Shock. Like, just we just opened like infinite red removal, and then I just played like red removal and white weenie for my deck, and then Jeremy played blue green tempo because he opened Jace and Nissa, and
okay,
yep, and so and then he opened 9 bounce spells, like so. like not like bounce spells slash bounce creatures. And then we also had two, I think, put to sleep. And then I had like the four mana arrest and stuff, which I thought like was so bad, that four mana, but it's actually not terrible in this format. And then I had two of the tapper guys. I also had two of the tapping enchantments, but again, thought that they were terrible in this format, which they may or may not have been. I didn't play them, so I'm not sure if they're good or not. Other people played them against us. And actually, like, the last pre-release that I caught, which I think was the second con set, I believe, or no, maybe it was Dragon. It was whatever one I did the casting for. Me and Tyler Bloom talked about this a lot too, where like because removal is starting to get like so bad, these like 2 and 3 mana creature enchantments are like starting to become kind of playable. And especially the like this, it's like the something of the Hierophant or whatever. It's like the 2 mana whenever your guy attacks, tap a guy. It seems like that's such a powerful ability, being able to just attack through blockers. Like, putting that on a Menace guy or a Flyer, like, is really OP. And then you think about it and you look at it and you're like, well, you know, he's just going to get 2 for 1 or whatever. That's shit. And I'm just time-walking myself, you know, if I play that. But really, like, it's actually, like, much better than that, I think. But yeah, so I had two of those. I had two of the Acroan Jailers, which are, like, the guys that you just pay 3 mana to tap a guy. Which, again, I thought was, like... What? I thought that card was, like, way too expensive. 3 mana. But it actually isn't when your deck is just 9 bounce spells, removal, and then you're just attacking. Like, this, what I found about this set is that it's, like, in Intuitive Giant and in single sealed or whatever, who knows how the draft will play out, but I found that, it's very unforgiving. So the key turn is like turn 3, 4, 5, I think, or maybe even 4, 5. And like the format's really unforgiving. So if you stumble or if you miss or if you're behind on that turn, then I find like it's very difficult for you to claw back. And so like the decks that we played being basically tempo decks, it was just like in the first couple turns it was like stick a threat sometimes it was do nothing for a very long time, and then it was just things like, okay, we have one guy, they have 1 or 2 guys, we just like they attack, we just turn to frog their guy, block it, kill it, to get a spell into the bin and kill their guy, and then next turn we untap, draw our fourth land. If they have blockers, we're playing Mana War for 4 mana and bouncing their guy, or javelining them for 4 mana and killing their guy, or fucking putting it to sleep, and we have spell mastery so it never untaps for like fucking basically all of time, or we're dispersing it because we have 2 disperses, or we're tapping it, or we're fucking arresting it, and then all we needed was 1 or 2 guys to just attack them, and that's all we did. And then, you know, they would... So now their turn is like, okay, well, do we spend mana to play a guy? Well, they bounced a guy. So they bounced a 3-drop. Should we play a 4-drop, or should we replay the 3-drop? Well, if we play the 4-drop, hopefully it has more impact on the board. But if we replay the 3-drop, then they're not getting any more information, but it's probably just going to be a chump blocker. Well, or maybe we play a kill spell and we kill their guy, but then we don't have any board presence whatsoever. So what do we do? And then what a lot of people would do is they would just try to advance their board presence by playing a bigger threat if they drew the land. And we would just, again, we would just untap, bounce your guy, attack you. Untap, kill your guy, attack you. And that was the whole game. Like, our opponents had no fun, and we cruised to XO victory. So that was sweet. And then in the second sealed, we picked blue-red again because we wanted fucking Thopter Squad, goddammit. And we opened slightly more Thopter guys, but we did not open a squadron of them, so we still couldn't play fucking Thopters. Goddamn shit. But we, like, again, opened 2 Send to Sleep, 2 Turn to Frog, 2 Disperse, 3 Separatist Void Mage, which is that Man of War guy, and then, like, some Swift Masteries and shit, which are, like, actually, like, surprisingly good, and, like, Claustrophobia and shit like that. And then, so the deck that I played, I cut every creature in my deck that was not a Flyer or the Whirler Rogue, which is the guy that makes something unblockable. And basically, I just played, like, blue-white tempo Flyers with like Kithian's tactics, which is like your white overrun or whatever, as like my finisher. And then people just couldn't really do anything after, like, it was a slower deck for sure, but they couldn't really do anything afterwards to my flyers, and they just died to like these renowned 1/3 guys. So Thopters are like super annoying in this set. There was like lots of people that got lots of Thopters, like just like not even the good ones, just like these two, this 3-mana 2/1 guy that brings in a Thopter, and like while he's not very good, what's that?
He is very good.
I mean, he's not very good at attacking. Like, he's not very threatening. He's like so good value wise, and then he just fucking he just mucks your board up forever, like so that you can build a board presence. Like, we couldn't do anything when they played those guys. It was super annoying. And then Jeremy played like black red, either draw no lands or draw all of his lands. So we two won the next two-headed giant. So it's still fine. But yeah, I had like the most fun at a pre-release in a very long time playing this set. It's like very fun. It's super fun. It's a very cool set in terms of like the cards and the flavor, and like I really like the flavor of like calling the ability Menace is super fucking like resonant. And then calling the other ability Renown is like also so cool. Like, you're just some fucking soldier, right? You're just this fucking, what is this guy called? Fuck, I just had him. You're just this Akroan sergeant, right? You're just some 2/2 first striking guy. You know, you're just like kind of good in battle, whatever. And then you fucking, if you get through and you like fucking smite the wizard or some shit, then like you're the hero. It's like, man, you see what Bob did today? Bob who? Fucking Bob, man. And everybody knows your name. It's like cheers, you know? So I think that's like super flavorful. It's like super cool. And then like, yeah, we just had like a really great time. Everybody was having like lots of fun with the set. The play of the weekend for me for sure was drawing my 6th land so that I could steal the guy's 4/4 Thopter Hanger. So that's like that thing that costs XX, and then you put it in with X 1/1 counters on it.
Yeah.
And then when it dies, you get that many Thopters, and then you can tap it to put a counter on it. So they put in a 4/4. I rip my 6th land. I fucking Act of Treason it. Then Jeremy has Rogue's Passage, gives it unblockable. We alpha strike them to like, I don't know, fucking 7 or something. And then I use Pia and Kieran Nalar to sacrifice their Thopter squadron, shooting their 2/2 flyer and getting myself 4 Thopters.
Nice. Nice rip.
Yep. Pretty good. So yeah, so it was like super fun. It's a good set. It's a good little set. And I mean, like, any set where you can play blue-green tempo is like, that's my fucking jam. I want blue-green to be in every set and not be shitty like Simic in Return to Ravnica.
Yeah, it was real bad in it.
Yeah. But yeah, it was like fun, and like the blue-green deck is really interesting because you get like the bounce guys and everything, and but then like with the green side, you get things like Yiva's Force Mage, which is like when it comes into play, you give a guy +2/+2, and you get like these weird renowned guys that are very good. Like the it was surprising how many people couldn't deal with like the 4/4 trample rhinos that also become then 6/6s.
Yep.
You know, yeah. And like that, and those cards only cost 5, like, you know,
yeah.
And then you have like random Whirler Rogues that make your guys unblockable. And then like this other renowned card is really good. This Undercity Troll, this card's insane. It's a 2/2 for 2 with renown 1. And then it also just has regenerate. So like it just is fucking bonkers. And then in a tempo deck, they literally could just never kill it. It was like attack you. And they're like, all right, well, fucking, I can block this with my one guy, and it dies, and you just regenerate, so that sucks. Or I cannot block it, and then it's a 3/3 regenerate on turn 3. That also sucks. Or, you know, I could fucking, yeah, I guess I just block it. And then we're like, yeah, whatever, turn to frog. And then we have white mana up for something else, or whatever, like, you know, and then, or send a sleeper guys, attack with Undercity Troll. So your guys are tapped. We've now got a 3/3 with regenerate that you probably can't kill before like, because there's nothing that does three damage in this set. You can, like, claustrophobia it or arrest it, but that's only if you're on the play and you're a turn ahead of us. And then, if you do that on your turn, you're not doing anything to advance your board position, and then we just bounce your guy or disperse your arrest and kill you. So, yeah. I think it's a super fun set. I'm interested to see how the draft goes. A lot of people were saying in the single player sealed that, like, the one thing they didn't like about the set was that if, like, once you fell behind, it was, like, nearly impossible to ever, like, come back from that. So I don't, like, sometimes that's a good draft format, sometimes it's bad. Like, Zendikar was a fun draft format, but then, like, lots of, like, once people figured out you could just go, like, Welk and turn Trusty Machete and the game was actually over, then it was just like I got sick of it. So who knows if that'll happen to this. I hope that it doesn't. It seems like it's a really cool set, but
yeah, all the feedback that I've heard about it is that it is a blast to play.
Yeah, it was. I had a great time.
It's awesome.
Yeah, I didn't think that, like, once you fell behind you were kind of stuck behind, but, you know, it might have been just what I was playing, so.
Yeah, and, like, I mean, that's a small sample size, right? Everybody's just playing, like, yeah, just the prairies, yeah, and stuff. But like, a lot of people just felt, like, once you fell behind, there was just, like, because the creatures are generally, like, pretty good for quality, what would happen is, like, you had to spend your turn to try to get rid of one of their creatures or, like, to match them, and so that put them a turn ahead, and then if you missed your land drop or you know, like, got, like, well, not counterspelled, because the counterspells in this format are garbage. But if, like, something happened where your play basically got time-walked, then, like, it just felt really terrible because, like, the decisions that you were trying to make were bad ones. Like, should I play a guy or should I kill his guy? Well, if I kill his guy, you know, then he plays another guy and that's the only removal spell I have. Or if I play a guy, then he kills it and he still has a guy.
Well, I felt like there was a lot of, like, 2-for-1 type cards. Like, you know, we talk about that 2-1 guy where it's like, yeah, I've got a dork on the bottom, but at least I can start turning the corner because I've now got this, like, little attacker in the sky.
Yeah.
And, like,
yeah,
that guy can do a lot of work.
Yeah.
One thing that I did find was that, like, the white cards, like, the flyers, it's really hard to deal with flyers if you're not flying yourself.
Yes.
Like, that's one thing that I ran into. I was also playing black-green, so I'm not doing myself any favors in that area. But
right.
I was finding that it was very much like, choke up the board, get a big guy, and have your big guy just be bigger than his big guy. So it wasn't anything smart going on or anything like that. It was just like the clog up the board and drop a big guy, which is kind of like a corset theme in a sense. I've just like let my bomb do the work and just dirtle behind it.
Isn't that like every corset ever though?
Yeah, I think like that's what I mean. Like it's just kind of a corset theme. I liked a lot of the white cards. I thought they were really, like, neat. I love the Thopter cards. I think each one of them is, like, pretty good in its own regard.
Go ahead.
I ended up picking the black deck because all I really wanted was a foil Liliana. So I was like, oh, I'm just going to take the black one because I don't know anything about the sets. If I was going for a whole bunch of fun, I might have picked the blue one because I like the Thopters. But I picked black, and I got the black guy who, like, for my foil in my little bonus pack, was the black guy who's an elf, and he's, like, a 4-3 for 5, and he kills a creature that your opponent controls that has power and toughness that don't equal.
Oh, yeah.
Which,
that guy's good.
Yeah, that guy's good. I noticed that everyone I played against had, like, very symmetrical creatures, because he didn't actually kill very much. So I sat there and I started opening up my packs, and I had 2 of the 3-1 guy that when he dies, your opponent has to discard a card. I had the -2/-2 for all non-elves. I had 2 Elvish Visionaries. I had the Elf Lord. I had 2 of the elf guy who's 4 mana that you scry to, and then you can reveal the top card, and if it's a creature, it goes in your hand. That guy is nutty. Oh my goodness. There's so many games where I feel like I'm falling behind, and then I go turn 4, cast him, and I get to reveal another creature, and then next turn I cast them again because I revealed them off the last one and get another creature. Just, it's so wild because it's like I'm getting my creature and I'm getting my land drop because I can leave the land on top of the deck behind it. So
it just did a lot of work. So I ended up playing like black green elves, and I had some removal pieces. I had a Fleshbag Marauder. I was playing a reclaim, so it was like I ended up playing against like a red green deck, and the red green guy, he was kind of playing like the big green idiots type deck. And I had a spot where it's like I Fleshbag Marauder, kill off his big idiot. He follows it up with another big idiot. I reclaim it to the top of my deck, and then cast Fleshbag Marauder again, just like doing all kinds of stupid fun stuff like that. So I had a fun time with the deck. I dropped a match, ended up going X1 though, so that was kind of cool. Got a Chandra in my prize pack, so overall it was fun. I played like the last pre-release of the weekend because I was super busy this weekend. But it was a really fun set. Like it's got like a lot of flavor. Just as you were saying, like the Renown guys are so cool because it just kind of matches the whole Planeswalker idea of, you know, here's boring creature, here's awesome creature. After he's, you know, kind of done something. So I really like that. One thing that was really interesting is that of the 30 some odd people who were at the last pre-release, nobody picked blue.
Really?
Really?
Yeah, there was zero blue picks.
How is that even possible?
I heard it was actually pretty good this time, too. Like, blue's fine.
Blue is fine. We had a great time with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was primarily green. There was at least two foil nieces opened out of that.
Wow.
Lots of white, a little bit of red, and a little bit of black.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was the same thing here.
Really?
Yeah. But I seem to have a different experience than you two guys. I felt like when I was ahead, I was just stomping my opponent to the ground.
To the ground.
You know, it's something that is really interesting, too, is Stips was actually, he and I were talking about this in GP Montreal, and it didn't really register until now, until actually KYT when I was reading about your pre-release adventures on Twitter. And he was talking about Duels of the Planeswalkers, and well, specifically he was talking about improving his unlimited game, and something he's been focusing on for a really long time. And one of the things that, you know, one of the skills that good limited players need to do more of is just, like, making the attacks. You know what I mean? Like, attack, 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 and being the aggressor, and just, like, turning your guy sideways every turn. And he said, funnily enough, there, in the early stages of Duels of the Planeswalkers, they actually had to revise the AI because the AI was just actually turning every single creature sideways every turn and just attacking with all the creatures. And they had to dumb it down because it was too good. Like, just attacking every turn with creatures was too good. And the computer was winning way too often. And there's a lesson to be learned there because, I mean, a lot of the times you can make these attacks and your opponents, you know, they either have to respect your tricks, and maybe you have a trick and maybe you don't, and maybe they don't have the trick when they should. And, you know, so it reminded me of that, saying that being aggressive is a super powerful strategy, considering the fact that you literally just played guys every turn and attacked your opponents and won all the time. So yeah. It's interesting. And I think that's very true with core sets, more so that I think it's like, it's even more exacerbated with core sets than it is in any of the others. I mean, like, there's a million 2-drops, right? Like, there's a million fucking bears in this set. There's a bear that brings a spirit token. Like, really? Of course you turned your guys sideways.
Yeah, yeah. And I also wanted to mention quickly that, Jay, I guess, different experience from certain cards. I think the Jailer's actually bad because he's so fucking slow. And yep. I actually like the tapping thing. I think it's a very powerful thing. Again, it's one of those all-in cards that you can get 2-for-1.
Yeah.
But it's one of those, like, insanely powerful effects in the previous 2 blocks, whether it be, like, Elite Scale Guard or there's that Bestow guy in Theros that would tap a guy every time it attacked. That ability, having it being active repeatedly is insane. And my deck, one of the amazing parts of my deck, though, the way it could stay aggressive is even if they were able to stall my 2-drops or 3-drops, I had 2 copies of Knightly Valor. So those allowing me to push through and have that late game aggressive card. Usually I put it on like the 1/3 flyer that became a 2/4 after Renown. And now It's 4/6 vigilance. Like, they're like, what the fuck? Like, against people who you know, haven't been playing Magic for that long, haven't played with Knightly Valor when it was first in Return of Ravnica, I think. They're just like, what the fuck? Like, and the knight gets vigilance too? What the
fuck? I'm like, doesn't that shit out knights every time you attack?
No.
Just when it hits the table?
Yeah.
Okay.
I had one of those and I cut it because of, I thought it was too slow. Like, I was like, all of my creatures die to whatever that javelin was called, where you scry one.
Lightning javelin?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, is the four mana thing.
Yeah, it's the like, four mana bolt scry, yeah.
Yeah, so so I was like, well, like, turn five, I go to put this on a guy, and then they just... I'm just giving them extra value, so I just cut it for something else. But I think the thing, too, is that it sounds like KOT, like, it sounds like you're... pre-release experience in your deck was like white was really aggressive.
Yeah, yeah, it
was. And so in the decks that I opened white where I was going to play white, my white was not, I didn't, like I said, I opened zero of the common renown guys. Like I got no aggressive white cards. So when I was playing a little bit of a slower, so I was playing like white blue flyers and like I was playing a lot of like slow do nothing until turn four. Unless they do something, right? And then in my first deck, I was playing white-red, and I could have played mono-red. I just splashed white because it just ended up being better after I goldfished my mono-red deck a little bit. I just didn't actually like it. I needed something that was like when a creature enters the battlefield, like something gains haste or something's unblockable or something, or like ping a guy. Like I needed something that, because I had lots of things like Dragon Fodder and those weird like Thopter guys where, so I needed something to just give me a little bit of reach because I didn't have good, like good red cards. I just had lots right. of aggressive ones and lots of removal. Right. Right. So the Jailer ended up being insane in my white red deck because the creatures that I was, you know, I would tap down one blocker so that my menace guys could get through. Or I would tap down...
You had to do some work, is what you're
saying. Yeah, man, I had to work my ass off. Or, you know, the thing with the thing too with the tapper guys is, like, you know, Jeremy can bounce their guys, I can tap their guys, I can burn their guys, and then we can also, like, sleep their guys, right? So then what happens, too, is that, like, because the Jailer is so bad and is so slow, is people don't kill him very often. There was lots of times where people would like just wouldn't kill him, and then, you know, the one times, like out of all the matches, the one time someone tried to kill the Jailer, we just Titanic Growthed it so that it would live because they couldn't live through it. Basically every turn it would just tap down their guy and our two menace guys would hit them for six or something like that, right? And then, you know, the tapper is also, I find, really good with Renown. You tap your guy gets automatically bigger. Now they have to choose whether or not to deal with Renown or deal with this guy that's, like, super annoying. But, like, do you want to use 3 damage and a scry spell for 4 mana on a guy that taps for 3 mana? You know? So I think you're right. He's probably, you know, he's probably a lot worse. I think in draft, he's probably a lot worse than he is in sealed.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You know, sealed's just a slower format, and my decks that I had were just also really slow. And I could have misbuilt. Like, maybe I should have been playing, like, blue-black or blue-green, you know, or, you know, something to that effect, or red-black, or, you know. But, like, the white cards that I was splashing were just better than the splash cards of the other colors. And he ended up, like I said, doing a lot of work. And I think the main thing is just that he's annoying, and he was keeping my opponents kind of off their game. Like they were constantly being annoyed by this stupid Jailer, and you know, then when a bigger threat came out, they were like now tilted into this like, ah, do I kill this guy or do I kill that guy? You know, so
that makes sense.
Oh, I got so lucky and opened an Al Hammerett's archive also.
No way!
Oh, yeah, totally. Legendary Mythic.
Woo! Spring Break!
Did you play it?
No.
I figured, like, in Two-Headed Giant, that's the kind of card you want, right?
Well, like, only if you have cards that actually do anything. And then, like, I had two of those clerics that gain you 2 life for each one that you have. So, I mean, I guess I would have been gaining, like, a bunch of life off of those, but I only had 2 of them, like, this, and I had nothing that drew me extra cards, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We did open, like, and in our second pool, we opened an Animist's Awakening, which we didn't play, and that's the card that's, like, just X and green, and then you reveal cards from the top of your library and put all your lands into play from that, and if you have Spell Mastery, you just untap them. And we couldn't figure out if this card was good or not.
Yeah, I wanted to know. I actually just saw this card when, like, I don't think we mentioned it in previous episodes, and someone cracked open one, and I read it, and I'm like, whoa, it's like a weird scalable ramp card.
Yeah, like, I don't, and, like, Spell Mastery is super easy to get. Like, I don't think there was ever a time when we didn't have Spell Mastery. We just had it constantly. So, I just don't know how good this card is. Like, I mean, you're putting yourself ahead of your opponents, I guess. And you're kind of smoothing out your draws and shit, but, like, I don't know. Is this worth a slot? Like, I don't know actually how to evaluate this card, like, at all.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. I haven't played nearly enough to tell you.
Yeah, are you talking from a constructed standpoint or limited?
No, just from playing in limited.
Okay. Limited? Like
in constructed, I mean, there's scry and stuff. I don't know, like, maybe there's a way for you to, like, abuse this, maybe. But it is a sorcery, so.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you can't, doing it for one, it's like a, if you're not a spell master, it's just, like, obviously a worse ramping growth. But then if you can go to, like, I mean, you can get a bunch of land. Do they go to the bottom, like the non-land cards?
Yeah, the non-land cards go to the bottom. And
okay, random. Okay. So you don't mill yourself by accident.
Yeah. Because, like, even then, if you milled yourself, then at least you could maybe play it in, like it'd be bad in normal decks, but then, like, in, like some weird, like, Abzan Reanimator or something, at least it'd be like Mulch or something like that, right? So you could, like, tap this for, say, 5, and then you'd basically be mulching, where you'd, like, the top 4 cards, any lands, would just kind of go into play a little bit better than mulch, and then everything else would go to the graveyard so you could, like, reanimate it. But it doesn't do that. Yeah, like, I don't know. I don't know how good this card is. I mean, this card would be bonkers if it was an instant, so obviously it can't be an instant, but...
Right. I'm leaning towards the side that it's probably... not bad, but not impactful enough to be good.
Yeah.
I'm leaning towards that. I'm going to check what LSV thinks in his review after. In his set review.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Holiday Cube is on MTGO. Have anybody that's not Jay played any of that lately at all?
No.
No,
I did not play any Holiday Cube yet. I still have to do a Cut 5 because I love my Cut 5s.
Okay. So Holiday Cube is back, and this is like the full-powered Holiday Cube, but they took out Time Vault because that card was stupid. Yes. Which is great. And it's been pretty good. Some of the Cube streams have been really exciting. Some of them have been terribly boring and fair. I ran one on Thursday last week, which was, I don't know, it was okay. My deck was... only kind of okay, I guess. I like Grixis a lot. Grixis sort of like Grixis controlling Cube is fine. I play cards like Dak Fate, which is supremely busted in a holiday powered cube where everyone's ramping out these ridiculous mana rocks and you just take them all. It's pretty good. But yeah, Planeswalkers are difficult to deal with, and like Ashiok is fine. Moogle is good, so I don't know, it was fine. I had a good time. But what's more exciting is Thursday, tonight, when this goes up, I am part of the Streamer Showdown, if you guys didn't notice on the MTGO.com
Streamer Showdown
article. So I'm in the 9 o'clock pod with all of the big guns. You know, SG Doc is Gabe, right? So he is trying to run back his, like, he's trying to three-peat the last 3 showdowns he's taken down, or the last 2, this is his 3rd or something. But Kenji, who has similarly been doing very well in these showdowns, but albeit at the afternoon slot, is now stepped down into the murky depths of the evening slot to play with us degenerates, and he's stepped into the ring to try to take us down. So there's some pretty crazy competition. It's going to be fast and furious. It is, of course, Holiday Cube. And as you guys know, I'm not necessarily the strongest Holiday Cuber, right? Because I like to play these fair decks. I asked Alex if he would join me, Alex Hain, actually. And he, unfortunately, is deep in his testing for the Pro Tour. But he did give me some advice, and he said, under no circumstances should you play a fair deck, which is really against everything that I kind of want to do innately in Magic, right? Because I am, like, Mr. Fair Midrange Deck. But he said, just take all of the busted artifact mana, take all of the cards that say draw a card on it, and you'll do fine. So I'm like, well, how do you win with that? I just don't understand. So I decided to reach out to an old friend who has been having a lot of fun with the Holiday Cube and has stepped up to the plate to join me at what would be a super awkward hour to participate and co-pilot with me for this Holiday Cube outing.
Oh, man. Who would it be?
Well, I had to get somebody that knows degeneracy in Holiday Cube more than anyone else that I can possibly imagine.
Oh, my goodness. I know who that would be.
Who is
me
it?
Me too.
He's been it on the show.
Our friend He's that been you on- have drunk with. In his native land.
Correct.
Who was supposed to be on the show a bunch of times, but couldn't, because it's like fucking...
3 o'clock.
He's been on the show once.
He's been on the show once. It's 3 o'clock in the morning for him when he's going to join me. It is, of course, Dizzy L himself, Jan Vandervec, will be my co-pilot for this.
So do you know how to play Storm?
Well, I have been watching... So Holiday Cube's been out, and he's been streaming again. He always streams again during this time. And yes. So he's basically forcing degenerate shit every single cube. And he's like 20, when I checked this afternoon, he's like 25 and 12 or something like that, like since Cube came out last week. He was streaming all weekend. I caught as many of them as I could. And God, I just had a lot of fun watching. So sure enough, who better to guide me down the depths of degeneracy than you? I'm like over the moon excited. So
that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, buddy.
So when is that?
That'll be Thursday night. So the day this show goes up at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So it will be on my Mr. Scotty Mac channel. So you guys can tune in and check that out. It's going to be degenerate. I promise, forcing dumb shit. So it's good.
Yeah, this is very exciting.
I thought so. I thought it's going to be really neat. So make sure you all tune in, because Jan's hilarious, especially when he hasn't slept.
Are you getting a bell, or does he get the bell?
Oh, he'll have the bell.
Okay.
He'll have the bell. My pod that I'm battling against, Gabby Sparts. I'm battling against the Boyks, Derek Boyko. Of course, SG Doc, Gabe, Kenji, Moto Grinder 1, Noah Sandler. Trey Van Cleve, myself, and a new addition, Ashlyn Rose, who was actually on Kenji's first, what does he call it? Friends, Friday with Friends or something like that. So every Friday he has a crazy guest on his stream, and they just like hang out all day and whatever. So he had Ashlyn Rose on it. Ashlyn Rose is a cosplayer that did a gender bent Soren. Actually, at one of the recent events, and so she's been streaming herself as well, and I guess since that Friday, and so she's been invited to participate. So this is the pool through which I have to wade with Jan to find sweet, sweet victory.
I'm just really happy for you, Dad, that Wizards keeps picking you for these things. Like, I'm very proud of you.
So it's pretty sweet. So I'm on the list. Like, there's a mailing list that goes out. You have to get on the mailing list somehow, you know? Most notably by streaming a lot. But once you get on the mailing list, it's like, it's sweet, because they send it out and say, so here's what's up. And then you kind of have to, like, get at them real fast for your slot, you know? Because there's lots of streamers, only so many slots. And so I just, I'm really good at returning email super fast.
Oh.
Especially when it comes from those people. I'm like, whoop! Instant response. Be in the middle of a meeting for like 1,000 phones, doesn't matter. Snap reply.
What?
Yep, snap reply.
I was sure that they handpicked you.
So, I got handpicked for the list. I mean, that's sweet. Anyway, so I'm very honored, and I'm very excited, and every time I do it, I love it. I enjoy it immensely, and I will continue to do them proud, and do all of you proud, and continue my tradition of at least two wanting these things. Hopefully we can do better this time. Yeah. KYT, you are going to Ottawa, are you not? Is that what I understand? Like, Pro Tour Origins is happening. When we were in Montreal, I couldn't help but notice you spending a lot of time talking with one Dan Lanthier. Do you have some? Are you like? Are you doing a team? Are you?
Maybe. So I love this. It's a sick addition to the show. I'm working with like a lot of people for this pro tour, helping out different groups of friends that I have, but one that I will be working locally very in depth is, as far as I know, it's going to be hard to sort of coordinate our schedules because Pascal, Goyf Gate superstar, lives in Quebec City. Dan lives in Ottawa. And Dan really wants some real life testing, but all three of us have commitments and jobs and stuff. Well, me now, especially. So it was hard. Like, original plan was us three was to meet up in Quebec City for a week, stay in Pascal's place. He was going to buy a couch with his Goyf money for us. And that's a true story. But now, like, he's so into the race. He's been asked to, not asked, he was like planning to go to Dallas. Now, if Alex had done his shit and won the GP, like won Montreal or something, then Pascal would just give up and he would test. But because he's very much in the thick of it and still has a chance to usurp Alex, which I think he has a great shot, especially since it's going to be Magic Origins Limited. And Pascal's been on a GP Limited crazy run. And it's not a surprise if he actually overtakes Alex. I would not be surprised, even though Alex has a pretty decent lead with just one GP left to go. Now, so I'm going to Ottawa to spend roughly 4 or 5 days with Dan to draft with some of the Ottawa guys and to get some building blocks going in terms of constructed.
Nice. So does that mean that... So I know that there happens to be a Mana Deprived Super Series, not this weekend coming, but next Sunday, actually, in Ottawa. Did you do that on purpose?
No, because I didn't plan that MDSS specifically for that day, and I'm not even sure if I'm going to be there. There's going to be PPTQs here in Montreal, and so I'm going to be split. I might go back to Ottawa just to spend an extra day with Dan, but I think spending 5 days with him and just communicating online is enough. We also have Lucas Siao in a Facebook group. So all four of us are going to be sort of working together, but me and Dan most closely. And Dan is no slouch, having won GP Vancouver with Twin, so, and a previous national champion. So I'm very happy to have this opportunity working with him and for him to want to work with me. And I was sad to defer Brussels because I'm not sure if I told Jay or Jeremy are talking about this show, but Tyler Bloom and Francis Toussaint, that team like wanted me. They recruited me, but I said, "Oh fuck, I had a wedding," and I was honored to be recruited by, you know, some of the top players in Alberta that regard me more than just some dumbass content manager or podcast guy. So it was very nice of them, but I had to decline. But this time, only Tyler has made it, along with Sean Gifford, who aren't going to be working together because that much, at least from what I know, because Gifford has to work or something, and Sean is the lone wolf. So there's not much of an Alberta team at all, and Tyler's working with Hot Sauce Games or whatever. So, you know, this time it didn't work right. I would have loved to work with Francis because I think he's a hard worker, smart guy, and he's like one of the Alberta guys that I know better than anyone else, like Kim and Doug, because they were with Mana Deprived since the beginning in terms of contributing. So working with Francis would have been awesome, going back to sort of square one, but here I'm with Dan and more than happy to be with Dan because he's very solid, and again, like, gonna have a chip on my shoulder to try to prove Hayne and Stern that I can just be as good as them.
And then when they come knocking, say no. Good for you. Well, that's awesome. Well, that's really too bad that's all part of your plan. I'm actually going to the MDSS in Toronto on the Saturday.
Right, which should have been very successful because Modern, right?
I think
traditionally.
Yeah, I mean, like, Modern is huge in Toronto, right? Like, absolutely ridiculous, crazy. And it's probably the format that gets the highest number of people for large money tournaments. Like, Standard is fine, but like, I think Modern actually draws out more than Standard, or damn near the same. The advantage is that typically a modern player has more money or is dealing in higher volume, higher value items. So as a store, if the attendance is going to be the same, your sales and your buys are going to be way more effective in a modern crowd than it will be in standard. Just like a higher value, right?
Makes sense. Makes sense.
So I don't blame them. And modern's just a shit ton of fun. Everyone loves it. With not a lot happening and the banner restricted list that just went down. There's a lot of people kind of back and forth on that, but all in all, I think they're obviously at this point in time, I can't see any changes to the banner restrict list in modern happening until the Pro Tour. There'll be an unbanning or banning or whatever that'll shake up the Pro Tour, and until then, this is our modern. Get to love it, get to know it, and this is just what we're going to have to play in. So I'm very excited. I did get the green light to go and attend, so it is sort of you know, I got my magic schedule, as it is, worked out from now until the end of the year. This is sort of my big local event that I'll be attending. So feel free to come on by and say hi, and I will be there jamming some good old Team Geist. I'm representing hard. And then I guess after that...
Wow. Curious to know what the rest of your schedule is.
So August looks like Jared and I might be going up northwest, so that's exciting. So stay tuned for more details on that. And then Oklahoma City, which is another modern GP, I will be in attendance for as well, which is it's Curly's birthday weekend, actually. So it looks like all of Team Geist is going to be there except for Nate. So I will be there with Jason, Real Evil Genius, Larry Swayze, Curly will be there. So we'll all be, you know, hanging out, jamming. I expect that because it's modern, we're probably going to see a reasonable influx of pros. I know that Ifro mentioned on Twitter today that he was going, so that's sweet. We'll probably see the Duke and those sorts of guys coming out, you know, in that time frame. I wouldn't be surprised, since it is sort of on the west side, or more so on the west side, we'll see, you know, potentially some of the players from the Middle East coming over. You know, you might see Lee Shi Chan, you know, Nam Sung Wook, like that sort of stuff. So we'll see. It could
be. I was
going
to ask if Nam Sung Wook was going to be there.
I mean, like,
he's
a very prominent player for that sort of stuff. And I mean, Lee Shi Chan is big. He's big in modern. And if Lee Shi Chan is going, then I can only imagine that Nam Sung Wook's going to be there.
Oh, yeah. Maybe there's like a rivalry there.
Rocking that Jun deck. So.
Hells yeah. So
yeah, he's been building away at that. So.
Yeah, so that's what's on tap for me for this year, and then the winter I'm going to hibernate for a while and do my thing, and then we'll wait until the snow melts and we'll see where else I go after that. But yeah, I'm actually waiting to see what Wizards announces as far as GPs go. They should be announcing them at the GP or at the PT this next PT. So we should see the schedule at least for the next couple of quarters, if not the first half, it may be more than the first half. We'll see. I would love nothing more than, you know, GP NYC in the summer or the springtime, you know, even the fall, I'll take no fucking snow, but like in NYC, none of this like GP Jersey shit. It's not the same. There's so many wicked, amazing people that I would love to go down to New York City and see. And like, I would easily spend a week and, oh wait, I fucking lied. There's one more that I'm doing. Ah, I will be in Quebec City in October.
Oh, baby!
Yeah! So, Alan and I are going to go. We're going to spend a few days in this. We're going to go and Airbnb the shit out of that. And we're going to... It's a sort of our anniversary as well. So, we're going to bring the family down. And she's going to bring up her parents. And they're going to come as well. And so, I'm going to get the GP weekend to go and play with my boys. I'll spend the week with my family. It's basically going to be the nut.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think that one, because it's in October, that'll be fucking Zendikar standard too, right?
I think so.
Yeah, baby. That's what I'm talking
about. It has to be. October's pretty far out, yeah.
Yeah. So that's like extra exciting.
I mean, Battle for Zendikar has to be already coming because I had to plan some of the release events already. So it's like, we're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
We haven't even gone through Origins yet.
Yeah, so I'm really excited. They did the panel. They showed a bunch of the artwork. The Planeswalkers are apparently just baddie in that set. Like, and we're gonna see all four of the Origins Planeswalkers with the all five with the exception of Liliana. So they'll all have cards in the Zendikar block. Maybe even in Battle for Zendikar, who knows? But it's gonna be really, really neat stuff. So yeah, artwork looks crazy. Allies are back. Boom! Allies!
I love my allies!
Did they spoil any cards or
no. They only spoiled the artwork from two of the From the Vault Angels, which are, of course, the two Achromas. And yeah, they're both done by Therese Nielsen, and they look insane, but nothing actually spoiled, except for the fact that they did tell us that the four Planeswalkers are beaten and allies are back. So.
There you go.
Yeah. The artwork looks crazy-ass, though. Absolute crazy-ass. Oh, Kiora also in the storyline. Don't know if she's going to be a card, but in the storyline. So she'll be on at least some of the artwork. So that's pretty neat. Cool. Yeah. So.
Yeah, we were talking earlier, and Jay was kind of like, what? I didn't hear anything about that. But it was about a change that they made kind of like with the rules. And not necessarily the rules themselves, but like the IPG and how you fix a broken thing.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so when you're a judge, one of the feel-bad moments is when a player accidentally draws an extra card. You know, sometimes they draw an extra card and they shouldn't have drawn an extra card, and you're kind of like, oh, is this guy being sketchy or whatever like that? And it seems pretty clear-cut, but then there's the times where it's like a guy scries right before, like, a lethal attack, and he accidentally, like, just throws the card right into his hand, and whatever the case may be, or he makes the two hands touch when he's doing his scry and it becomes drawing extra cards and it's just terrible. So what they're doing is they're changing the penalty for drawing extra cards. It is no longer a game loss. It is now a warning.
What?
But, yes, but the fix is even stranger and interesting. So now the fix is, because it used to be a game loss, there was no fix. Like, the fix was pack up your cards and go to the next game. The fix now is, if you drew the extra card, you get the warning. They still check to see if you're cheating. There's still all that stuff, so I don't want to hear any of these corner cases. Well, what if that's a good way to do this? Blah, 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 blah. But you'll reveal your hand. Your opponent will choose which card gets shuffled back into your deck.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so you get clicked. But you don't draw a card. So if you draw an extra card and you are given the penalty of drawing extra cards, you have to reveal your hand to your opponent and they will get to choose which card gets shuffled back into your deck. It's not very abusable because it is like a judge-style shuffle. So what that means is if there is any known information or anything of the sort, that known information is supposed to stay how it is. So it's not like a case where like somebody's using a top and they see that they've got three turns of brick coming out and they try and like sneak an extra draw in there to get the junk stuff shuffled away. It would be one of those cases like, oh, you have a top. Okay, well, we'll make sure that the top three cards are still the same and that any cards you may have put on the bottom are all the same, you know, from scrying and all that kind of stuff. And then we'll shuffle the part that should be randomized.
That's weird.
Yeah. So... yeah. It is an interesting way to kind of go about things.
I mean, when you consider the change that they made with Morph and how they downgraded not revealing Morph to like a warning, and everyone was kind of really happy about it, and it was just one of those ubiquitously accepted changes. I think that this is going to fall into that same camp.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like there's the initial thing that I saw was a whole bunch of people who were trying to figure out how to explain it, much like the scry thing and like, oh, Delver's going to be so good. And it's kind of like, nah, it really isn't. But everybody trying to figure out, like, how does this, like, do things? It's like, no, Kosi's Trickster does not get a counter if it's a dry and extra card shuffle. You know?
Right.
It's a completely separate thing. This is not really exploitable. It's obviously going to feel better for a lot of people because you're not losing the game. You're getting a warning, which is, you know, ultimately should be better. And it's one of those things where, yes, there is room for abuse in the sense that drawing extra cards is a very abusable thing. But I think that the penalty kind of takes away a lot of the incentive. And it's not so punishing to a person who does it by accident, because the amount of people who are being kind of lumped in with like people who may have been doing something sketchy or may not have been playing, you know, super tight. I think that this really kind of fixes that kind of feeling where you have to kind of game loss a guy who just, you know, made a dexterity mistake versus, you know, like playing the game wrong.
Yeah.
It still puts a lot of onus on the judges, though, to, you know, do their mini investigation when they are answering the call to make sure that, you know, you're asking, why did you think you could draw that card? You know, little things like that. Don't grill the person to pieces, but still just ask a few questions to see if you trip a person up, because that's when you're going to find that kind of feeling. That's when your gut's going to step into this and say, hey, you know what? Something about this doesn't seem right. Let's, you know, ask a few more questions. So, neat change.
Very much so.
Are there, Jer, have you been hearing people who like hate the change?
No, I have not heard any negativity towards it. Now, when it first came out, I guess there was some negativity, but it wasn't really negativity. It was more like the corner case crowd where they're trying to break the rule. Oh, well, this is no good because in this situation, this does this. And that's where a lot of like that kind of stuff where it's like, no, the shuffle doesn't trickle shuffle things. No, this does not allow you to re-randomize your deck in a spot where you know some information and there's bad cards, blah, 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 blah. Like it's a lot of people who kind of came out and they tried to figure out how do I break it? And I'm sure that, you know, somebody's going to run the gambit. They're going to feel like drawing that extra card is going to be worth it. Especially, you know, it's one of those things where fact to fiction is a very difficult card because there are a lot of people who just don't know how to make piles. You're going to have a case where somebody's going to make a mistake. They're going to draw an extra card. They're going to reveal their hand. It's probably going to happen on camera or something like that. And the person's going to throw back the wrong card. And then that's when people are going to go, whoa, like this is a rule that benefits players who are better at the game.
Right, right.
Because there's still that aspect that the opponent has to choose to put the card back, which card goes back.
I think that element of it is very important too. You know, and I think that's the part of it that is very appealing. It's not just, hey, here's a card at random, right? The fact that your opponent gets to leverage your mistake and really has an opportunity to just turn it around and capitalize on it and really stuff you, like really punish you for it, especially when you get into some of the more, you know, the older non-rotating eternal formats like Modern or Legacy, where the card quality is so high and one card could, you know, make or break a scenario. I think that it's super, super relevant. So I'm very pleased to see that that aspect of the change. And I'm all for it. Very happy.
So happy.
So like in Vancouver, you'll have that. And you'll have the and you'll have the scry mull. And you'll, if you're on camera, you're like, you have to have everything just so. And if not, then, you know, they can go back in the camera and overturn rulings on the floor. Jeez, it's like we're a real sport or something.
It was pretty entertaining to watch Marcel, who has been like a Lands in Front guy for his entirety of Magic. He probably played Lands in Front before he started playing Magic. And to watch him play at the pre-release, trying to remember to put his lands behind, was just entertaining in general.
So, ironically,
like it was really getting under his skin.
I've tried to play Lands in Front, you know, just to kind of like mock other people, you know, and I can't do it halfway through the game. Like my lands are beside, like it's at some point, everything's in the middle of the board. There's fucking like creature land, enchantment land. It's like, what the hell is even happening here? Unless you just shuffle up your hand and just like randomly throw it on the table. Crazy.
We had this like guy who would show up like for the like odd draft and stuff like that. And his big thing, and he never drew attention to it, but it was just the way that he did lands left.
Yeah.
So he would have his library, then all of his lands, then all of his like his permanent, like non-land permanents. And it was like a column and then another column. And I couldn't wrap my head around how that made sense.
Yeesh.
So yeah, lands left. Unfortunately, I don't think you can do that. You could do like some sort of kitty corner type thing.
Yeah, it's still scary. Was there anything else that happened this week? Jeez, I don't think so.
Pascal finally sold his Guif.
Oh yeah, for like yes. just over $2,000 or something.
Yeah.
Why did it take so long?
He opted to do it sort of via PM, sort of like a silent auction.
Yeah.
You know, so people could just kind of like put up whatever they wanted. I guess there were way too many fake bids, and the quality ones that were really high, when the auction went through, they made other decisions with their money and couldn't justify it anymore. So it was like too little too late sort of scenario. But, I mean, the good news is he raised over $1,500 for charity. So that's fucking awesome.
That was crazy though to me. Like, he already vouched to donate 50% when it came to the eBay auction, but then he takes it up another notch to 75%, and it's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm sure I wasn't gonna do that. So big up to him.
Yeah.
For finally selling it for $2,007.
Sweet.
Another thing I wanted to talk quickly touch on, Scott, what I'm really excited about is tomorrow's fucking MTGO update, because finally it was postponed last week, but the big performance boost patch is coming, and I can't wait. So
what is this performance boost patch supposed to provide?
I gotta pull the shit up in front of me. But they were hyping it last week, and I was really excited. And last minute, they said they weren't ready, and obviously, sad panda. But for this one, they had it in their notes, in their update notes that were posted just a few hours ago, and so. Login time is greatly reduced. That means if you get disconnected during a draft or a game, you'll be able to join the action faster. That's a big one to me, because it still feels very slow to just get in. Moving large groups of cards is much smoother. We have reduced many cases where waiting for main navigation message or a crash would occur due to memory or performance issues. We have improved the performance when moving, sorting, and filtering cards for display. And there's just like a all these things that I'm hoping produces a cleaner and smoother MTGO experience. Because it's still, like, I love it more. I think me and Scott love it way more than a lot of those complainers and haters out there.
Agreed.
But there's definitely a sense of, like, lag or clunkiness with the program still. And not, like, once I'm in a draft, I love it. It's just that those on the edges, like logging in and stuff like that, there's still a lot of clunkiness there. And if they can smooth that out, that makes me love the program even more. And maybe gets other people to hate it. I mean, it's still frustrating to have to not be able to trade a specific number of tickets, but you know, I don't think they're adding that feature anytime soon.
Nice. Well, I'm looking forward to that. I'll be battling tomorrow night, on Wednesday. So I will let you know.
Yeah, to see if you can sense the difference.
It's tough too, because I'm often like back and forth on the beta, and the beta often has those sorts of implementations already in place, so it can be difficult to distinguish on occasion. But yep, I'm looking forward to giving it a shot. See how it goes. So sweet, very sweet. So what are you testing for the Pro Tour?
Oh, yeah. I was just going to get to that. I just realized you had asked me pre-show. I've only started to test tonight, right before the show. Matt Mealing, friend of ours, just really high on green-black elves being a possibility. And we talked about the show and just putting together a first draft with him. And getting a real decent feel for it, like, my favorite card is probably, because I only played against control decks, is Sylvan Messenger. Does a fuck ton of work.
Reload.
The reload, draw you three cards. It still suffers from the problem of a lot of your guys are just, well, in the control matchup, I'm sure the deck is fine in all the rest of the matchups. A lot of just these dumb guys, right? Like that, once they are able to wrath, because you don't have a lot of specific guys that will put enough pressure for them to want to wrath
Like, you have to overextend, basically, because all your threats are too minimal. It's not like some other decks where you can put, like, a 5-5, and then they have to decide to wrath or eat 5. Here, you're, like, putting a bunch of visionaries or mana dork, and it's like, they're like, ah, I don't really have to wrath. Like, I can take 3, and then they get a lot of time, and then they might be able to cast an Ugin or something. So, but otherwise, like, the ability, the resilience of being able to reload the collected company at the end of their turn, being able to sometimes randomly, well, it feels random to me, like Court of Calling for Shaman of the Pack out of, to kill them out of nowhere has happened. So it has some potential. It has some potential. It doesn't feel as strong as some of the other decks that I think, like Green Red Devotion, stuff like that.
I feel like Abzan Control is just still the default go-to best deck of the format.
I agree with that. If the tournament was tomorrow,
like I think it's Lucas's choice. Version. I don't think it's Raptor. I don't think it's Raptor Time. I love Raptor Time. I love Abzan Megmor. Still my like sleeved up deck. Will Snap just put 2 Languish in it and call it a day? Like, will do. But fact of the matter is, you can play respectively up to like 5 fucking sweepers in your deck. In the Abzan Control deck, and 3 of them are probably Drown in Sorrow, and your Elf's deck looks terrible. So I don't know. Matt has an obsession with tiny green men, and will play them at every opportunity. Birds of Paradise is basically his fucking spirit animal. So, I don't know, man. I don't know. But no one makes those decks better than him, so maybe it's good. Maybe it's good.
I'm still thinking Starfield of Nyx is a card that's going to make an impact. I just know that our boy Namsung Wook had played Junk Constellation, a journey into Nyx, so you know maybe there's a deck still there.
It's true. That is true.
I like that card.
I mean, it's going to... If we're going to do the fantasy draft at some point, you're going to disappoint our loyal listener, Xavier, Jared, if you don't take Namsung Wook, like, pretty highly, I think. I think the spirit our fans will call you on the spirit animal bullshit. So it's coming up, man. It's coming up.
It is, man. I don't think I can lose with that pick, though. Just putting it out there.
Yeah, I'm just excited to try a lot of different cards, like the creature Nyssa and all of this stuff. Like, there's a lot of impactful cards, so there's a lot of work to be done. If I can't find anything, I mean, it's just a core set that changed. It's just one set that came in a set that in a format that already had a lot of cards in it. So just picking Abzan and just tweaking it a bit, you know, should do more than fine. And then if I am able, lucky enough to 3-0, 2-1 my pots, you know, I can get pretty far. So I was not intimidated last time. And of course, my dream scenario for Scott is to beat Ben Stark and tell him to stick it.
Just like, now will you remember my name?
So that would be the dream scenario.
It's good. Good, 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 good. So yeah, lots of exciting stuff on the horizon. Your Pro Tour is coming up, and then after that, I guess it's like there's. When is the Pro Tour? Shit, is it first weekend? Is it Civic Day weekend? Is it July or August?
It's August 1st and 2nd. Well, it starts on July
31st.
31st.
So it's okay. So it's a long weekend. Okay, sweet. So we've got the MDSS doubleheader weekend.
Yeah.
Plus some pre-TQs in Montreal, you said that weekend. Then it's the Pro Tour. And then, God, whatever happens after that in August. Also, there's something else that's going on that bears mentioning, by the by. In case all of you didn't know this. Kyle, who does fantastic work for us, as you guys will recognize from the amazing Airwolf edition. So he has a modern pre-TQ weekend, actually, in Belleville, which is coming up this weekend. So if I wasn't on daddy baby duty, there's 2 1K modern pre-TQs, one on Saturday and one on Sunday. So he's like super excited because it's the biggest prize pool they've ever had. And like, although it's not, you know, Toronto or Montreal standards, you know, because like face to face Toronto plays a 1K every Sunday. He's going. I would totally go if I wasn't just stuck with my daughter all weekend. But maybe Kyle will listen to this and maybe he will say, come on down anyway, and I'll have Shannon look after your daughter. In which case, then, I might be there. God, can you imagine I spiked that pre-TQ? That'd be fucking gross.
That'd be right? Sick.
Gross. That would be gross.
Jeez. What is that? Oh, that's qualified for the RPT. Anyways, so the details of it are on the Mana Deprived public group on Facebook. So if you guys want any details, check that out. It's not soft, per se, but the volume's not necessarily going to be that high. So, Kyle, get at me. Maybe say, fuck you, look after your own kid. I don't want you here. Anyways. Yeah, so guys, check it out. Go, it's going to be fun. I might be there. Yeah. Anything else? Do we have anything else?
Jay?
I have a shit story.
Shit story, shit story, shit story. I love how it's becoming a regular segment.
Again. Again. Jeremy, why don't you play me on, buddy? What the fuck? That sounded like a train. That's the best you can do, is just like a foghorn, like... That's pretty good. Alright, it's early June, 1992. I just graduated 7th grade, and I was feeling happy to be the top dog next year at my junior high. Because obviously my junior high ends at 8th grade? More importantly, at this point in time, next week, I'll be heading off to my second year at Camp Earl Wallace. Only 6th and 7th graders can attend this camp, so I get my taste of being top dog a little earlier than expected. Not to mention, the year prior, I introduced the game of Quarter Flick to the other campers, and it was quite lucrative for me. Maybe this year, not only will I have a ton of fun again, I'll also come home with a pocket full of money like the previous year. The 3.5-hour-long trip down to Lake Cumberland flew by. Once getting to my cabin, it took no time to settle in and get ready for the week of fun. The first couple of days, they go great. I meet some new friends, I make a little money, I'm playing quarter flick. One of the new counselors has the nicest set of titties I've ever seen in my whole life, and is always wearing a two-piece bikini. Kalukale! I spend most of the day with an erection, tucked up under my waistline and shirt pulled down so no one can see. Plus, we have private showers, so I can always go in there and rub one out every night. Avoiding blue balls was so great. Day 3 comes around, I throw on my favorite shirt, the one with a dead cow and the live cow and a no sign over the live cow on it. And the back said, meat is murder. Sweet, delicious murder. My shorts with the drawstring, in case I have to hastily tuck a boner away. Today is boating, so I hike down the long, steep hill to the dock. We listen to the speech, get assigned our boat, hop in, and take off to the open water. Once we're out in the middle of the lake, something hits me like a ton of bricks. But it was not a ton of bricks. This isn't right. Something is very wrong. I have to poop, and I have to poop bad. I got no warning. I'm instantly down to the mud with a little turtle head poking out. Already, I'm pouring sweat. It takes everything I have to clench the muscles of my butt cheeks to keep this thing in. It becomes my turn to drive the boat. We're supposed to show we know how to start the boat and look for debris and all this stuff that's boring and doesn't involve keeping a shit in your ass. At this point... I could care less if I pass or fail. I grab all the throttle and I gun it back to the dock. When I got there, the instructor was pissed. I told him, I was sorry, I misunderstood the instructions. And since it looks like I'm not going to pass, would he mind if I just went and took a shit? He is very happy to get me out of the boat after what I did, so he agrees and he lets me hop out. The bathrooms are probably a mile away from the dock, but I do know there is a single porta potty up the hill, close to where they let everyone swim in the lake. So I start the long, agonizing task of walking up what feels a 90-degree slope for about 400 or 500 yards, all while keeping my muscles of my butthole clenched so tight, like a wet vice. I did it. I made it. I can see the porta-potty. Just a few more feet. Victory. It's mine. Oh. I get there. And are you fucking joking? Does God hate me? The door is locked. And when I pull it, I hear a voice. And someone...
Someone's in here.
Someone's in here, they say. I'm freaking out. I have no choice. I'm going to have to wait. And then it happened. The mud wanted out. And it was a mudslide. And, of course, it's not solid or just a little bit of the consistency of pudding. There had to be a whole pound of it. And it was messy. I don't know what to do. My underwear is... It's full, and it's coming out of my shorts. It's running down my legs. My first thought was to just jump in the water. You know, wash it off. But, of course, it was full of people, and at this point, I'm in tears, so I'm not going to do that. This is going to be the worst 5 days of my life. No one will ever let me live this down. I know, because I would never let someone live this down. As I stand there crying and looking down at the dock, a stroke of genius hits me. I reach in. I reach in and grab a handful of the mess.
What?
I fling it all over the back of my shirt. The best I can grab, I grab another handful and I swing it all over the back of my shorts. And then I take my hands and I wipe them on the sides of my shirt and the pants. I take a deep breath and I go for it. I take off running, and I do a baseball slide down the hill, drawing as much attention to myself as I could. When I stop sliding, I scrape some of the mess off my shirt. I fling it down on the ground with everyone looking, and I yell out, "Oh my God, I just slid through a pile of deer shit! Oh my God,
oh. This
is so gross!" Everyone could see my back. Oh, I turned, so everyone could see my back. I could tell by everyone's reaction that they saw it, but I had achieved my goal. Everyone's first reaction was a groan and not laughter, which means they bought it. I yelled to the counselor, "May I please go take a shower and clean up? This is disgusting!" Which, of course, I got an immediate yes, go, go now, go. Later that night, I could share with laughter everyone about how gross it was to slide into a big pile of deer shit. Which is infinitely better than curling into the fetal position and sucking my thumb crying while everyone else laughed at me about shitting in my pants. The rest of the camping trip went great, and I'm still friends to this day with a few of the guys I went camping with. It took me about 13 years, but I finally shared the truth with those friends, and now I've shared it with you as well.
That's real good.
If you know somebody who slid through deer shit,
they're a liar.
To stop listening to this podcast. Call them up and call them out.
Yeah. Just play this for them over the phone.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Hey, we know. We know. We know.
That's awesome. That's a real good one. Well, like wrapping up with a pretty good shit story is a really good way to call it a night, I think.
Yeah. I'm surprised that every time I hear Jay read these, they're like always written almost the same style too. Just like the description of like the entire situation, just the writing style.
It's literary genre shit story.
Yes.
So good.
Well, thanks for tuning in this week for Shit Story Corner. I'm Jay motherfucking Bish, joined by Scumbag Schofield, Mana Deprived Content Bungler, KYT.
That would be a good card.
And Grandpa Scotty.
Grandpa.
Join us next time when we will talk about something and share feelings about things and maybe a poop story.
Bye!
KYT, you still there?
I am very much here.
Slow.
Are you typing somewhere to me?
No.
Okay.
I thought you're looking this up right now.
No, he said afterward.
Oh, after? I thought we were waiting so you could look it up right now.
No, after.
Wondering why everyone...
Holy shit, I literally thought I heard him say,
I'm going to look it up
right now.
No.
And he starts typing. I'm like, okay, he's going to look it up right now.
Oh, man, no. That's too hilarious.
Jesus Christmas.
Kyle, don't edit this out.
All right, fine.
This is what people would get on the live show.
On the live show,
don't you guys want the live show?
Yeah.
You fuckers.
Yeah, I would have looked it up.